This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is Evie Shockley, and she is one of the most beloved poets in America and one of the most startling. And she's going to tell us this with her own voice. Let's have a poem.
Thank you. This poem is called My Life as China. I was imported. I was soft in the hills where they found me, shining in a private dark. I absorbed fire and became fact. I was fragile. I incorporated burnt cattle bones, powdered remains, ashes to ashes. I was baptized in heat, fed on destruction. I was not destroyer, was not destroyed. I vitrified. None of me was the same. I was many. How can I say this? I was domesticated, trusted, treasured. I was translucent, but not clear. Put me to your lips. I will not give. I will give you what you have given me.
The voice of Evie Shockley at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. She is the author of 4 collections of poetry, most recently The New Black, winner of the Holmes National Poetry Prize. And she's also the author of a critical study, Renegade Poetics, Black Aesthetics and Formal Innovation in African American Poetry. She's won several awards, and today she's being featured at the Library of Congress, and today she is ours. I was teaching all weekend, and when I told them I was going to see Evie Shockley, everyone screamed.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So how is it that they know you, Evie? Do you know that you are one of the most well-known American poets?
Oh, I don't know if that's true, but I do find more and more that I hear from people about my work, people who I don't know at all, for whom there's more than one degree of separation. And it's such an honor and so humbling to think that the words are circulating like that.
And your new book is coming out, and what is the title?
Semi-Automatic.
And Wesleyan is producing this book?
Yes.
Okay. And they are stalwart producers of your work.
They are fabulous. This will be my second book with them, and they're fabulous press.
What questions or arguments are we going to be able to find in these new poems?
Semi-Automatic has a number of threads, but one of them is the state of violence that we find ourselves in, not just in this country, but in this world, in this moment. I'm thinking about the long history of violence, in particular racial violence. I'm thinking about the current state of affairs with what we would have to say are the awareness of police brutality with regard to African Americans in particular. And I'm thinking about violence in more expansive terms, the kind of violence we do to the planet, the kinds of violence that happen for Americans off stage in war, not off stage for other people.
This is all in the new book.
This is,
we can't wait.
Yeah.
We can't wait. Give us a taste of it.
This first poem was inspired by a video, frankly, that I saw in the summer of 2015 about some event that took place in McKinney, Texas. A student videoed on their cell phone the police in breaking up a pool party that had been reported. And this poem was thinking about that and also about the idea of metaphor, or simile in particular. What does it mean to liken, right? The poem is called What's Not to Liken. The 14-year-old girl was treated like A, a grown woman, B, a grown man. The bikini-clad girl was handled by the cop like A, a prostitute, B, a prostitute by her pimp. The girl was slung to the ground like A, a sack of garbage into a dumpster. B, somebody had something to prove. The girl's braids flew around her head like A, helicopter blades. B, she'd been slapped. The black girl was pinned to the ground like A, an amateur wrestler in a professional fight. B, swimming in a private pool is a threat to national security. The girls' cries sounded like A, the shrieks of children on a playground. B, the shrieks of children being torn from their mothers. The protesting girl was shackled like A, a criminal. B, a runaway slave. Liken it or not.
That's Evie Shockley from her new book. I was wondering, were they different girls? I saw that video. Did you use different things happening to different people, or was that one person?
That's one young woman, and I just tried to, maybe you might say, freeze frame and describe what took place in maybe 4 or 5 minutes with the kind of care that
Now we know what Evie is like and what she writes about, but we don't always know how to tell the radio audience what your poems look like on the page.
Ah.
So as well as doing traditional poetry and lyrical poetry, I have to say Evie presents her work with an aesthetic that is absolutely visual. She uses the space on the page like no one else. Well, there are some others that do this. She uses punctuation in the most unusual ways, in the most imaginative ways, acrostics, patterns, pictures of with words, and then, of course, as I say, traditional stanzas. So it's really important to get her work as well as to hear it. And I recommend The New Black, which was her last book.
Yeah, most recent.
Most recent book. What do you think you're saying? What is the political thing you're saying by presenting your poetry on edge like jazz does to music, setting notes and setting words on edge? What's the political ramifications of that?
I mean, it's great that you draw a connection from that to jazz because as I was just teaching my students in my Black poetry course yesterday, I think, jazz, like hip-hop, are both innovations in music that are born out of particularly repressive moments in sort of the political, socio-political history of African Americans. And those forms of innovative music respond to both that repression and the resistance movements that come out of it. I think of my poetry as participating in that kind of spirit, innovating as a way of trying to get out of some of the boxes that our writing can be put in.
Give us some more, Evie Shockley.
I'll give you one more from the new book at this point. One of the figures that I've been thinking about more and more recently is the character Topsy from Uncle Tom's Cabin. And I decided to, you might say, rescue her from Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Let's just say it. Let's rescue her.
Let's rescue her. But she's still constrained by some of the same things that constrain others of us. And this is a poem that's dedicated to Sandra Bland. And
remind the audience who that is.
Sandra Bland is one of the recent 2015 victims of police brutality. She died mysteriously in jail 3 days after being taken into custody for, I think, failing to use a turn signal.
When crossing lanes.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so here she is, Evie Shockley.
This is Topsy, who I imagine as a kind of a familiar spirit. Topsy talks about her role. I don't mean to get into their heads. I just go. It's like I'm possessed, too. As if my mind and body aren't my own. Anyhow, it's all in the timing. If I desert a girl too soon, she'll end up 30 before she's 13, dragging around a burden big as a church at an age when some young women ain't weighing nothing heavier than which purple they want for their pedicure. But if I hold a sister too long, not a thing on earth can tether her. Now, this Sandra was anything but bland. I was hooked. I do like to ride a tongue that's limber, that can keep up with the flash of my spirit. She had a dancing mouth, the kind that could give you warm, such warmth, or just as easily give you hot if called for. I know where I'm welcome. I was still cutting capers behind her smile the week she died. I overstayed. In Texas, parts of Chicago too, Pickaninny droll don't come in women's sizes. You can set whatever tone you want with a pair of baby blues, but when I roll black women's brown eyes, they always turn into sapphires.
Beautiful. Shifting gears, Renegade Poetics is the most important book on black aesthetics in print.
Oh,
you're too Evie kind. Shockley has taken everything from the black arts movement. She even harks back to the Renaissance. She has Henry Louis Gates quarreling Amira Baraka with their opinions, finally assembled all in one place. What made you want to do this?
The poets themselves. I write, as you mentioned, about poets, starting with Ann Spencer, a New Negro Renaissance, Harlem Renaissance era poet. I write about Gwendolyn Brooks, Sonia Sanchez, Harriet Mullen, Ed Roberson, and Will Alexander. And it's a kind of a journey through 20th century poetics.
But it's scholarship.
It is.
It's art and scholarship. But what a huge undertaking.
It was daunting.
what triggered this passion that says, I have to set aside 3 years and do this, the research? This is the consummate volume of black aesthetics.
It's building
in poetics.
Thank you.
It's creating more of an audience every day.
I would hope, I'd like to think so. I mean, it's building on a lot of amazing work by a lot of scholars. And I'm fortunate to be able to stand on, you know, the shoulders of people like it, Nate Mackey and Alden Nielsen, and, you know, and be comrades with other scholars.
But do tell us the moment you said, I've got to do this.
I had just moved to Rutgers, where I teach now, from my first job at Wake Forest, and I really became clear that the kinds of things I was thinking about in my poetry, what did it mean to be a black poet in this moment? What kinds of things could I do? What kinds of things did I feel like I had to do or was not supposed to do? Those kinds of questions, for me, harkened back to the black arts movement and its imperative that black poetry be, you know, black and with a capital B, right? What did that blackness mean? Mm. That was a question for me as a poet and as a scholar. I felt like I could learn something that would help me and others.
This by is a complete historicity of black thought in poetics.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Did it do what you wanted it to do?
Well, I don't know if anyone's ever satisfied with their work, but it did a lot of what I had hoped. I learned a lot.
I recommend it. You know why? Because it's real easy to read.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
It's scholarship, you know, sometimes it's a little dense.
Yes.
This one is very, it's written by a poet.
Oh.
Need I say more? Evie Shockley, let us go back to the poet with another poem.
I'd like to read a poem that emerged when I discovered that two of my favorite female entertainers actually had something in common, knew each other, were friends. I hadn't known this until just before I was writing the poem. And the two women are Ella Fitzgerald and Marilyn Monroe. It turns out that Ella Fitzgerald was at a point in her career in the mid-1950s when she was still kept by Jim Crow segregation from playing in a lot of the clubs that she might have wanted to. Marilyn Monroe, as it turns out, was a huge fan, and when she found out that Fitzgerald couldn't play in the hot club in L.A. at the time, the Macambo, she promised to take a front row seat every night of the whole week if they would book her. She said, the press will eat it up and everything will be fine. And so they did, and she did, and it all sort of unfolded just as
I never knew that story. Let us hear the poem.
Here's the poem. Celestial, L.A., the mid-1950s. Her name was Ella, L, French for all woman, every woman, she, the third person, feminine, hippie, buxom, regal curls piled atop her head, soft shiny crown for her diamond voice, the soaring swooping bird, the orchestra in her throat, the stars in her eyes, the star in front of her eyes, each night, 1 week at the Macambo. Her name was Norma. She wasn't normal, blonde. Her name was Marilyn, the eye in angelic, first person created an immaculate concept, the image of pure beauty, sound, power. Her name was Ella, L in French, all women in her eyes, the star in front of her eyes each night, glamorous, first lady of song, iconic, backstage, the effort behind the effortlessness, the exercise, the training, the makeup that made up the woman. Her name was Norma Marilyn Ella Estelle, the star.
Love it. Let's hear another.
Oh, well.
This, I have to tell everyone, is from the book, The New Black.
Yeah.
Which came out in
2011. Mm-hmm. This next poem, I think, will speak to a lot of people who grew up in the States and or other places where a lot of the Andersen and Grimm's fairy tales are part of your childhood. I use fairy tales to tell a story about a college-age woman, but, oh well, it's called Never After, and there is an epigraph by one of my favorite poets, Harriet Mullen. The epigraph reads, "Was she enchanted or drugged?" Never After. Once upon a time, she went to a magical club on Rush Street in Chicago, Illinois. She went with her girl, who went to pick up men, white men. Her girl was a Cinderella, a goddaughter, wore the right shoes, a red cape with a hood. Her girl knew a prince from a toad, and how to get results. Wolf whistles. She went to chaperone. She was the designated driver, especially when she drove home alone. She'd love to watch the sunrise over the water as she headed north on Lakeshore Drive. She called her girl the afternoon after to see how it went, to hear what went down, who went down, on whom. Breakfast downtown in some cool cafe. A ride home with the white knight in the morning in his imported European steed. Horsepower. She wasn't jealous. She had a man, a black man. She only wished she were invited to dance more at the club. She wasn't black enough or white enough to catch the white guy's eyes. She didn't look like the type. Two, she nursed her amaretto sour till it was mostly melt. She was the designated driver, the chaperone, the colored girl, whose skirt was not short enough or tight enough. Two, one night her man was off from his job. Parking steeds, imported European steeds, for tips, for tuition. He could take her out. Where? The magical club downtown on Rush Street, of course. She would not be a chaperone. She would be a princess. She would dance and dance with her man. She would get down on the floor. At the door, there was a problem. Out-of-state IDs. Her ID was from the same state it always had been. She was from out of state. Her girl was from out of state. Her man was from out of state. They were in college. They were seniors. They were legal. She made her case. She stood her ground. She put her foot down on the one, on the two. They got in, paid the price, got their hand stamped. However, there was a pee beneath the dance floor. The clock kept striking midnight. She could not spin the straw into gold. She couldn't let down her hair. They knew it spelled trouble, but they decided to have one drink and leave. They had a point to make, paid the price, drank the drinks. She ordered an amaretto sour. They brought her a stepmother's special, a red delicious. They made their point, but, and she pricked her finger on it. She began to fall down. She could hardly stand. It. Charming. Her man's kiss did not revive her, make it go away. He carried her off into the set sun, off the set, up. She slept it off. They shrugged it off. They learned what they already knew. They knew better. They lived to tell the scary tale.
Evie Shockley, I'm Grace Cavalieri at the Library of Congress. Before we hear another one, I just have to say that poetic prose, what I'm hearing and what I'm knowing now that makes it work is the lyricism within the line. Mm. And that changes it from prose. There's a spring in your line.
Yes.
And even though it's margin to margin. And so I just discovered that.
Oh.
So let's have another poem.
Well, this one has a different kind of spring in the lines, although it is another prose poem. It's one I wrote, and I feel like it's very central to what the New Black is doing. I wrote it when my nieces were newborns. They're 9 now, so it's hard to believe. But I was hearing my
Are
mother.
Are they twins?
They're twins, yeah. I was hearing my mother sing songs to them that she had sung to my sister and me when we were young, and thinking about history, the flow of time, and race in America. And this is the poem that I wrote. It's called Duck, Duck, Redux, and it has two epigraphs. The first one is, "Those who cannot remember the past are doomed to repeat it," and that's George Santayana. And the second is, "Those who cannot forget the past are destined to remix it," that's me. This is the way we wash our face, wash our face, wash our face. This is the way we wash our face so early in the morning. This is the way we segregate our schools in 1896. This is the way we segregate our schools in 2007. Mary had a little lamb, a bad, bad black sheep with 3 bags full of wool. It followed her to school one day, work one day, Wimbledon one day. It followed her to church one day, which was against the rule. This is the way we patrol the roads in the antebellum South. This is the way we patrol the streets in our shiny New York. Cue wedding bell. Oh, bring back my Shawnee to me. This is the way we appropriate black culture in the post-Reconstruction period. This is the way we appropriate black culture in the 21st century. This little piggy went to market, got mad bling for spittin' whack rhymes and calling women hoes, and still wound up crying, we, all the way home. This is the way we use a noose in Jim Crow America. This is the way we use a noose in Gina, Louisiana. Little blues boy, come blow your horn. I'm sorry to tell you, but his horn's done gone. And as for the boy who used to blow so sweet, he's under a mountain of debt, working for minimum wage. This is the way we wash our hands of you historically. Throw you into the Atlantic, spray you with Birmingham hoses. This is the way we wash our hands of you today, with jerry-rigged levees. So early, so early in the millennium.
I'm so happy to have heard that. It is another dimension to the page, surely. Another dimension. That singing, I had read it, and it is lyrical, but that's something special. Before we go to the next poem, I just have a quick question. I observed this again from teaching this weekend, and that every African-American student knows every African-American poet. They know Gwendolyn Brooks. They know Lucille Clifton. They know Langston Hughes. They know Evie Shockley. I cannot say that of other poets who seem to just know each other, with some exceptions. So what do you make of that?
I think the tradition is so important because a lot of people writing today, I would never want to speak for everyone, but I think a lot of African-American poets writing today understand how vital the work was that was done by poets who came before to open doors, make a space, clear the path, and you remember them, you honor them.
I want to do a program someday with you about Gwendolyn Brooks.
Oh,
and Annie Allen.
Absolutely.
That needs a whole other program. But until that moment, I want everyone to know that we are listening to poems from The New Black by Evie Shockley. It is available until her new book comes out. And let's hear another poem.
This is a poem that actually comes, segues nicely from that question, and the title leads right into the poem. Because there should be love poems. Iridescent odes to skies and their fluid mutating blues, their restlessness, their restless canvases where we cast the adjectives brilliant, dark, deep, clear, that name our daily moods, ringing doubt and delight, confusion and cheer, the brave lines we spit to spin out the renewed story of two lives winding themselves into joy. There should be lyrics that hit all the notes, do, mi, sol, in the scale that belt them out as they arrive, passionate, pushy, pulsating, unpredictable, breathing the whole Billy, Abby, Ella range of the torchlit heart. There should be love poems, star-sprung stanzas that try out the rough ballad of two lives lifting themselves higher together than apart, that sing it, breaking relief, each waking, that the hours are ours to share, certainty that silver lines even cumulonimbus ire, the your hand in my hand in your hand of right now and from now on.
Torchlit hearts, I can see it. What is the best thing anyone ever said to you about your poetry?
Oh my goodness.
Or anything good.
Oh, you know, I think sometimes just finding my poetry and my name as a poet in conversation with some of the poets that I so admire, people will bring my poetry up with Harriet Mullins or with Gwendolyn Brooks's, you know, with Baracas, with Sanchez's, and that's the greatest honor I could possibly get.
Yeah. Honor earned.
Oh, thank you.
And what is the most unfair criticism you feel that's ever been leveled?
I remember once being told in writing by a publisher who was taking a pass on my work that it told people how to think. And I don't feel like that's what I'm trying to do in my poems. I am, I think, trying to tell people what to think about. Pause here. Think about this.
Evie Shockley is at the Library of Congress, and she's going to read us a final poem.
All right. I think I will end with the poem Post White. It was written at a moment, I think, just after the inauguration of Barack Obama, and at a moment when we were talking about being post-racial. Post White. My country, tears of thee, sparkling on a stiff gray bow, tied against cognitive dissonance, getting ahead, holding it together, keeping it really warm, sweet land of basketball, barbecue, sweet potato pie and Cadillac, liberty-crowned lady with a torch in her voice, off thee I spring, hopeful at last. My love, you've come a long way, baby, on the stony road we trod through this land where my father's and mothers died, on poplars, in quarters, under the lash, and over the objections of the vocal few singing, freedom, oh, freedom, over me, and the authors of declarations of independence, finally appointed to positions of authority, Phyllis Wheatley, with pen in hand and internationally recognized skill in diplomacy, Secretary of State, Frederick Douglass, who won't dread Scott's claim of citizenship, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Harriet Jacobs, master strategist, Speaker of the House, music moving mountains, I'd let freedom ring with the harmonies of liberty, a work song, hold it steady right there while I hit it, reckon you ought to get it, a tisket, a tasket, we drop kick that old basket, mama's got a brand new bag, and say it plain. From that day forward, we were all hip-hop, you don't stop being American.
10 years ago, Lucille Clifton said to me that you are going to be the most important, one of the most important voices in America. I just want you to know that. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Evie Shockley is our guest. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Additional support is from Friends of Poetry, Maria Van Buren, Longan Ambrose, and Hiram LaRue. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.